Hi, I'm Jamie, and thank you for checking out Bad Dreams. Before we get started, I want to note, these are all listener-submitted stories. If you have a scary story of any kind, fact or fiction, please send it to baddreamspodcast@gmail.com, address in the description. As an insecure creator, I feel like I must add, this project had only started as a personal experiment, so these first two episodes may be a little rougher than the rest, and the quality may vary. All that aside, here's Bad Dreams. Bad Dreams is a horror podcast featuring strong language, violence, and situations not suitable for all ears. Viewer discretion is advised. The Bunker by Bob Hayoka and Jamie Staffa. I was 6 years old. Danny, get up. We have to go now. My stepfather quietly exclaimed, his face red, covered in sweat. He looked down at me through the dim glow of my nightlight, the pinholes of his eyes wide. He was completely panicked, in a state of shock, breathing heavily above me. His voice was like a low, trembling whisper, the words he spoke sudden and terrifying. Hey, buddy, he said. Let's go. I could tell he was serious, that something very bad was happening. I couldn't move at all, my body frozen with cold sweat. It took a second or two before I clambered out of the sheets and stepped onto the creaky wooden floorboards. I just looked up at him, full of sadness and confusion. But where are we going? I asked, my eyes welling up with tears. My little heart thudded so fast I thought it was going to explode out of my chest. Listen, everything's gonna be okay. My stepfather replied with a voice that suggested the exact opposite. We just have to go, right now. Where's my mom? I asked. I didn't want to leave without her. Your mom, she's gonna meet us at the bunker. So get your things together, quickly. In the bunker? I questioned, the lump in my throat making it difficult to talk. Yes, buddy, it's happening. The sky people are visiting, he said, trying to be calm. But I need you to be brave. Can you do that? I nodded. My stepdad was a prepper, a survivalist, one of those men that believed doomsday was right around the corner. Every other day was the day it would happen, the day civilization would crumble and the people would have to fight off the government, the looters, the savages, and now the sky people. In the last few months he had taught us about them. He showed us on a map where they would land. He told us that they would enslave us and perform experiments on our bodies. He kept whole rooms stocked full of MREs, bottled water, and freeze-dried jerky for when this would happen. He was strong and brave, and my mom loved him so deeply, and so did we. My stepfather held me tightly, grasping me in his arms. I could hear his heart beating out of his chest, the rhythm skipping with every step. In the other hand, he pulled my brother toward him, all of us dashing towards the front porch. I could hear the front door swinging open and slamming shut against the wooden frame in the wind. I could hear what sounded like a thunderstorm in the distance. Was that them? I wondered. Children, don't look! Yelled my stepfather. Don't look at anything outside! Just keep moving as fast as you can and look down! One by one, he threw us into the car. We closed our eyes and stayed down low, holding each other. I could hear my stepdad scramble for the keys, throwing the vehicle into gear, peeling out as we hurtled away from the house, away from the only home I'd ever know. It was sometime later that night that we arrived at the place he called the bunker. My eyes opened slowly, a strange kind of light flooding in through the tinted windows of the car. My older brother opened the door, scooping me out onto the earth outside. Above us, the sky was hazy and gray, storm clouds forming over our heads. I recall this thunder and lightning rumbling in the distance, and a cold wind rushing leaves over my feet. We were in the clearing of some forest, a dirt path reaching a total dead end. I remember that all around me were these huge trees, haunting and tall, their branches swaying like giants in the breeze. I felt scared and nervous, and I miss my mom. Our stepdad led us briskly through the woodland until it felt like we were lost in a labyrinth of trees. Suddenly he crouched down, looking all around him, before dusting off the ground with his bare hands. As the leaves and dirt were swept away, it revealed what looked like a large, rusty manhole cover. I noticed the number lock on its surface, just like those on a suitcase. He ran his fingers over it until it clicked into place, lifting up the lid. I recall staring fearfully into that hole as if its open mouth would swallow me up. It was dark and damp and deep like a well. He dropped a glow stick inside it, directing my brother toward a long metal ladder. My brother was only 2 years older than me and only a little bit braver. "Come on," my stepdad said. "We're running out of time. It'll be safe down there, I promise." My brother went down rung by rung until he reached the bottom. My stepfather kept looking behind him into the woods like someone was about to catch up to us. There was no sign of my mom. I softly began to cry. He took me tightly under one arm and climbed down after my brother. With a loud clank, he closed the hatch of the bunker, a firm locking sound echoing around the stone. We were safe. The glow stick's light casted strange shadows against the spider webs. My brother was looking up at us from below. Soon we were all together at the bottom, standing inside a filthy-looking utility room. I clung to my brother's side, glad to be reunited. We watched as the green light illuminated a series of buttons and cables. Our stepfather reached over to flick a red switch. Suddenly I heard a low, aggressive hum that buzzed all around us as light bulbs flickered into life. It was then that I saw the metal door, heavy and thick with concrete, staring at us like the gateway to some hidden world. It was locked like a huge stone safe, a round black dial in the middle. With some haste, our stepfather approached it and turned the black dial back and forth, spinning the metal wheel in his fingers. He took his time, number by number. We heard a loud click. My stepfather turned to us with a smile. The door opened slowly in a cloud of dust. Our stepfather frantically ushered us into the bunker, pulling us inside with a heavy slam of the door. He bolted the gateway that was now behind us, locking us in from the inside. I turned around to see the place. It was this large, low-ceilinged basement, both spacious and poorly furnished. There were these long, endless shelves full of supplies. I remember it had the claustrophobic feeling of a tiny, enclosed museum space, but with that eerie vastness of a large, abandoned church. It gave me the creeps. "In your rooms," he said. "Change your clothes and switch on your monitors, just like we talked about." His face was covered in sweat. There was a coldness to him, his words impatient and demanding. "What did I just say?" At first, we weren't sure what to do. We just gulped and did as he asked, not wishing to piss him off any further. He led us to our chambers, a small room for each of us, equipped with 7 sets of the same clothes and a monitor bracelet that kept track of our pulse and blood sugar. "Where's Mom?" my brother asked. I heard the bravery in his voice start to disappear, his eyes looking at the solid concrete walls. The place was solid. Nothing could get in or out. "Don't worry about your mother right now. She'll be here real soon," came the reply. Our stepfather was nervous, frantic. I watched him take out his gun to check how many bullets were in his magazine over and over again. I could not imagine a world without my mom. And if my mom wasn't here, she was with the Sky People, and that would be even worse. Somehow, in the flickering of the light of the common room, my brother and I fell asleep. We were sitting up waiting for her. My head was on his shoulder. The bunker echoed loudly, like a cave of strange sounds, but mostly I heard the endless pacing of my stepfather, walking back and forth, whispering to himself. My dream showed me the faces of the Sky People, of their strange white eyes and oval mouths. I imagined them in their floating black spheres, watching our house, far from above. We were safe in the bunker, safe from the enemy. Soon, my mom would be too. When we woke up the next morning, our stepfather brought us breakfast, a sachet of MRE. I remember those things being awful, but we ate the rations as we were told. We waited and waited, but there was still no sign of my mom. He had us perform our chores for hours, cleaning and scrubbing the walls of the bunker. There were these stains down there that were so old they seemed almost alive. We mopped until we were too tired to work anymore. My stepdad was busy fixing the electronics of the bunker. I guess there was a computer system put in place to alert us when we needed food or sleep from the monitors. Pretty advanced for the year 1996. "When is Mom coming to the bunker?" my brother asked. We were met with silence and a curious look. an expression between hopelessness and kindness, like the saddest smile in the world. He gently informed us that if our mother hadn't come by now, she might not come at all. We knew by looking in his eyes that the Sky People must have gotten her, and we all knew the Sky People never gave anyone back. We were devastated. The time passed slowly, at an antagonizing pace. After months of being underground, we began to not only miss our mom, but the sunlight itself. We were given more chores to occupy our time, arranging provisions, sewing blankets, making sure all of the clothes were clean, etc. The generators gave us movies to watch, the books gave us stories to read and write. The more time I spent there, the angrier I was at the Sky People. I wrote long letters to my mom and put them under my pillow, hoping that someday she'd find them. At night, we might hear the sounds, loud and ominous, from the forest above. We knew it was the Sphere's landing, the Sky People looking for us, but they couldn't find us down here. We practiced being quiet. We switched off the lights. The Sky People were easily fooled. Every once in a while, our stepdad would leave the bunker and bring back things from the abandoned stores, toys we wanted, soda, snacks, videotapes. He said they were all abandoned, that the entities had taken everyone away. He said the streets were silent, save for the whistling of the wind. When summertime came, our stepdad began hunting. He told us most of the animals had been left alone, now roaming the forest without fear of hunters. We didn't like being left in the bunker alone and wanted to go with him, but he always said it was too dangerous. Each night we would wait, terrified in the bunker, hoping and praying for him to return. We lived like that until I was 12 years old and my brother was 14. We became accustomed to life down there until all we knew was the world below. 6 years of imagining the world above, 6 years of mourning the loss of my mother. But our stepdad reminded us it was lucky that we survived and now we must live in her honor. My brother and I would often fantasize about the day when we would return to the surface to feel the sun on our skin and the grass under our feet. We would imagine being strong enough to fight back and save the world. We both noticed a change in our stepfather. He became more relaxed with us, more nurturing and kinder. I remember him being proud of us for keeping ourselves busy, for imagining ways we can combat the aliens. Then one day he sat us down with a wide smile on his weathered face. He had a large muddied sack on his lap, leaking red. "I think it's about time I teach you how to hunt," he said, handing each of us a knife. "Scavenging and hunting is crucial for survival. When all the supplies run out, all we have left is the hunt." I recall his excitement, watching as he showed us how to skin and gut a deer carcass. Somehow I found it exciting, captivating even. Touching the flesh of that warm, dead creature was the closest I'd been to nature in years. He promised we could both go outside to hunt and scavenge one day soon. It was a Tuesday, late afternoon. I remember my brother being so excited to get out of the bunker. His whole body was shivering with the rush of it. He was much quicker than me at learning things. He learned to use his knife as if it were a paintbrush, delicately and with amazing precision. I was jealous, of course, but I was happy for him too. I couldn't wait to hear his stories and descriptions, to feel the world again through his eyes. I said goodbye as they opened the large bunker door. Then it slammed shut with a gust of wind, the vacuum howling like a banshee. Suddenly I was alone, that cold chamber echoing with silence. My imagination turned to the purest horrors, to the worst areas it could possibly go. I imagined the forest being full of danger, full of holes and traps and mysterious lights. I visualized the crafts waiting for them from above, the trees trapping my brother and swallowing him up. I saw the experiments the aliens might perform, how they would abduct and mutilate my brother, taking scalpels and devices to his flesh. Then I imagined the door being locked from the other way around, being trapped in the bunker with no provisions, starving to death by myself. I tried to keep my mind at ease. I tried to trick it by performing other tasks, but I could not sleep. I could not think. Not until they had returned. 2 days passed. They still hadn't come back. I wondered if I had been the last human being left on Earth, the last remnant of my family who had all gone away by now. I had never felt so alone, so without hope or purpose. My body is trembling as I write this. Another week passed without any sign of their return. I gave up on the possibility of an extended hunt, of the chance that it was all some kind of test. I was a 12-year-old boy, huddled in the corner of a large room, 50 feet under the ground. I rocked myself to sleep, listening for the sound of movement from above. But finally something in me snapped. I decided to go out. I placed a sheath knife in my pocket and filled my backpack with MREs and bottled water. Unbolting those metal locks gave me a great sense of excitement, like an animal being released from a zoo. With every clank of the bolted door, I felt more free, until it creaked outward into the fuzzy light of the utility room. I stepped out cautiously, slowly, until I reached the ladder above. So many years it had been since I'd seen its rungs. As I climbed each metal bar, I felt my heart start to race. The world of the bunker sank further and further into the distance, until all was left was the sound of the surface. My ears were filled with birds chirping and the sound of actual wind. I reached up in the darkness, finding the metal handle of the hatch. I gripped my shaking fingers around it and pushed upward with all my strength. It took every part of me to make it budge. My teeth grit and my throat groaned. Finally, like popping the cork out of a bottle, the hatch gave way and opened up into the forest. I leapt out with every ounce of energy onto the warm, sunlit soil. My body lay there, sprawled out beneath the trees, the grass now tall and thick. I felt bugs withering around me. I heard the sound of bees drifting past my ears. I heard birds singing to each other in deafening displays of beauty. I let every pore open up to the experience, panting with excitement and exhaustion. But I knew I had to get up and start moving. My stepdad always said, "Keep moving. Once you stop, you're an easy target." When I got to my feet, I was dizzy, my eyes still adjusting to the colorful world. I slowly stepped through the woods, looking around me at all times. Every snapped twig would make me jump. Every silhouette of a deer would put me in a frenzy. I walked between those tall, familiar trees, no longer afraid of them as I once was. But I was not prepared to meet my fate, to be killed and tortured by the aliens or humans. I heard the mechanics of aircraft engines from above. "They're still here," I quietly said to myself. "They must have returned for me." My stepfather did mention that they wouldn't be interested in our planet since we destroyed it, just the able bodies of the humans for labor and experiments. It was then that the forest thinned out before me. An empty country road running between two halves of the forest appeared. I walked out into the baking sun, stepping on the hot asphalt of the road. A car approached from a distance. A scavenger, I thought. I attempted to hide. My stepfather said to avoid everyone at all costs. It's safer that way. As the car slowed, a middle-aged man placed his head out of the window. He had a weathered but kind face, with delicate eyes and a warm smile. "Hello?" he said. "Do you need any help?" I stared at him, my face muddied from the ground, my haircut jaggedly cut and out of style. I hid myself away in the bushes. This could be someone that wanted to hurt me. Or worse. "I see you. Come on out now," he said. "I'm not gonna hurt you." I did as he said, terrified about what is to come. I need to find my brother and dad," I said in a loud and quivering voice. "Please, I beg you, I need your help." As I stepped out of the forest, I watched his face drop in shock. I'll never forget what he said. "You're one of the Harris boys. Went missing years back. We thought you were gone." My mind could not register what he meant, nor how he'd know my name. But soon, I was in his old rusty truck and on my way to the police station. At the station, posters stared at me from each wall. Posters with my face on them. Posters with my brother, my mom, and my stepdad's too. We were all happy in those pictures. The next few years was a blur of social workers, CPS, courts, and foster homes. My stepdad had previous convictions for assault, domestic abuse, and some form of mental illness. He snapped the night we went to the bunker and killed my mother. He panicked and played out one of his stories to hide us. I led those officers to the bunker where they found the remains of my mother and five other missing women buried about 10 feet away from the manhole. My stepfather and brother were never heard from again. That was 24 years ago. On this episode of Bad Dreams, we heard stories from Bob Hayoka and me, Jamie Staffa. Be sure to follow Bad Dreams on social media and rate, review, and subscribe to Bad Dreams wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.